Thank you for traveling with Amex Platinum. To your right, you'll see Oceanside Relaxation at a fine hotel and resort property. When booked through Amex Travel, you can enjoy complimentary breakfast for 2 and 4 p.m. late checkout. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. See for yourself when you sign up today and get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts. If you dare.
Xfinity has free premium networks for everyone this month, no matter what kind of entertainment you love. Addicted to true crime? Catch killer cases and more spine-tingling shows on A&E Crime Central. Crave adventure? Explore Asian action movies on Hayah. Searching for something extreme? Check out skating, snowboarding, and more on Fuel TV Plus, the global home of action sports. And find crowd-pleasing bops on iHeartRadio's Hit Nation playlist. There's new free shows and movies to love every week. Say free this week in your Xfinity voice remote.
On this episode of Sports Illustrated Weekly, the new season of Netflix's surprising smash hit Drive to Survive drops this weekend. British Formula One presenter Will Buxton joins us to explain how the show's unexpected success in America has created countless new fans and helped grow the sport. And later, NFL Network reporter Mike Garofalo fills us in on the fallout over Calvin Ridley's season-long suspension for gambling. But first, with March Madness set to begin this weekend, Sports Illustrated senior writer Pat Forty tells us about a former sneaker executive who claims some of the biggest recruits to the biggest programs are all getting paid. We take you inside the scandal that rocked college basketball. It's March 9th. I'm your host, John Gonzalez. From Sports Illustrated and iHeartRadio, this is Sports Illustrated Weekly.
We are getting guys from New York and Philadelphia and Los Angeles to come to Lawrence, Kansas. Is it because they like the wheat fields or is it because they're getting something?
Whether or not college athletes should be paid, it's already happening. Merle Code was once an employee for both Adidas and Nike, and part of his job was helping ensure star prospects and their families were financially compensated. And on that point, Code has no regrets. Because while some consider those methods unethical, Code maintains it's simply a part of the business.
I do not have to abide by NCAA rules. That's part of the pitch. Because I'm arm's length away. I'm not a part of that NCAA system. I don't have to follow the guidelines.
For his actions, Code is looking at 9 months in prison. I discussed his situation with Sports Illustrated senior writer Pat Forty, who interviewed Code at length for his podcast, Yahoo's College Football Inquirer. All right, Pat, let's start with how Code ended up getting arrested. Tell us what happens to Code on the morning of September 26th, 2017.
Yeah, so like 6:30 in the morning, and he hears the front door being either knocked or doorbell rang. I think he said that his wife was in the shower getting ready for work. He goes downstairs, opens the door, and there's, he said, up to 20 federal agents on his lawn or, you know, right there at the doorway, guns drawn facing him. And he's wondering what the heck just happened. And they're saying they're putting him under arrest for bribery, fraud, money laundering. And he had no idea what they're talking about. And then they played him the audio excerpts of some of the wiretapped phone conversations he had had with some of the other co-conspirators in this deal. And he began to figure it all. He still thought it was just a complete mistake. Like, how could I possibly be charged here? But it became very real when they put the handcuffs on him and put him in a car and took him and booked him that morning.
According to Code, he was merely one part of a larger system. But Pat, he told you that compensating kids is considered standard practice and that basically all the big programs do it. Do you believe him?
Sure, I believe him. Yeah, I mean, look, this had been an open secret for a long time. This was just the most detail and acknowledgement of somebody like, yeah, I paid guys. But I think everybody knew certainly that the best players were getting paid. They were being taken care of. Almost all of them, by the time they even got to college, had agents already. Maybe they hadn't signed anything formally, but they were receiving kickbacks from agents. But yeah, I think that this was the way basketball had gotten things done. And now we just got to find out a little bit more of the nitty gritty of how it happened. So, I mean, I would say if your school was signing blue chip players in the last 20 years, they were probably all getting paid.
So Code said to you that the feds weren't really after him so much as they were after these big high-profile names like Sean Miller and Rick Pitino. And to make that happen, they wanted him to wear a wire.
They wanted whoever else they thought I was going to be able to provide them. And I was like, listen, man, I'm not doing that. That's just not who I am.
And we know that Rick Pitino ended up getting moved out at Louisville, but no criminal charges against him. Pitino recently tweeted about this. He said, for the 10th time, I have no idea who Merle Code is and why he's using me and others to be relevant. What do you make of Pitino's denial?
It's strategic as much as anything, because he doesn't have to know who Merle Code is for Merle Code to still be telling the truth. So what Rick says about, okay, I don't know Merle Code, doesn't mean that he didn't know that there was a deal going on. It's just a well-worded statement from Rick.
Yeah, there are degrees of separation here where there's quote-unquote plausible deniability, but everybody understands what's happening behind the scenes. And Code, in his book, there's so many revelations like that, and also in the conversation with you on your podcast, where he said he doesn't really believe there's such a thing as a clean program. And he outlines a conversation between a Kansas assistant coach talking about trying to recruit Zion Williamson, that the family wanted money and housing. Williamson ended up going to Duke, but Bill Self, like Pitino, denies any knowledge of an off-books deal for Zion. And Code writes in his book, not only that he knew about this whole thing, but that the higher-ups at Kansas who gave Self a lifetime contract knew. So this really goes beyond just the coaching level, right? I mean, a whole bunch of administrators are complicit in this.
Yeah. I mean, in a larger sense, everybody knows what's going on. You guys have got to help us get the top guys. You guys do your thing. We're fine with it. I have to pretend I don't know what's going on, but they all know. And then, of course, Self's bosses certainly know. Okay, if you're getting the top classes at Kentucky, if you're getting the top classes at Duke, and so on and so forth, you should probably have a pretty good idea how those guys are coming.
When he says that there's no such thing as a clean program, some people go, well, wait a minute. Duke and Coach K have this reputation. Are we to believe that Duke and Coach K are just like everybody else?
Yes, we are. We absolutely are. I'm not sure the program was built that way in the 80s when Coach K first got it going, but they were getting the top players. And we, as stated, the top players were by and large not going anywhere for free for a long time, for decades, really. And there are other trappings along the way that would not pass the smell test. One of the first being that, and it's mentioned in Merle's book, that Zion's dad is asking Merle for $100 to buy groceries because he doesn't have enough money to feed the family.
I literally came home and told my wife, hey, I went to the ATM. Lee was asking for some grocery money because he was out of work. And I gave him $100 of my money, no problem. Adidas wants to give a kid and his family $100,000.
A couple of years later, when Zion goes to Duke, they move into a $500,000 house in a luxury subdivision. I've driven by the house. I've seen it. It's a nice place. When families are suddenly getting up and moving across the country with their child who's going to be in school for 1 year, there's probably a deal going on. Mike Krzyzewski's had a great career, but if anybody out there thinks that he is Ivory Tower Mike, you're probably wrong.
I found it really interesting that the pushback wasn't so much about this happening at all. It was that, hey, we want it to happen for us too. There was a conversation about Billy Donovan when he was at Florida, and he was mad about this whole thing, but mostly he was mad that Nike was catering to Kentucky and that they weren't spreading the wealth around. And Code said that Donovan threatened to call Nike president Phil Knight personally because he said this stuff is getting out of hand. So it wasn't so much that Billy Donovan was mad that kids were getting paid. It was that, hey, we're not getting our share of these big recruits.
Absolutely. Yeah. No, and that's one thing. You know, Code goes into some pretty good detail on that, of it being a little bit exhausting trying to maintain good relations with all these people, but having a distinct pecking order. Nike has a lot of schools that it outfits. Adidas has a lot of schools that they outfit. But somebody's got to come first. And if you're not the school that's coming first, then you do get a little bit angry. And I think there was definitely a shift. I mean, Billy Donovan went through a period where he was getting all the big-time recruits, you know, in the late 90s, early 2000s. And then Kentucky reestablished itself rather dramatically with John Calipari. It was just an ungodly haul of big-time players right away as soon as he got there. And I'm sure Nike was integrally involved in a lot of that.
I find it really interesting how Code sees himself fitting into this underground economy and the morality attendant to that, where he says, you know, there was a five-figure payment to Anthony Davis in Kentucky, and he didn't see that as a bad thing because he said AD was generating tens of millions of dollars for everybody but himself.
Here's Davis.
And on your pod, he told you that he's not going to apologize for doing his job and challenging a corrupt system. So Code isn't very apologetic about this, right? He sees himself as part of a system that functions the way it functions, and that it's a capitalist society, and there shouldn't be anything wrong with that.
This was about me trying to help and assist families in need, for the most part, to try to change their station in life, because the system didn't treat them fairly. So let's create a system where it does.
Code, I mean, makes it very clear that he thinks that the NCAA rules are outdated, unfair, and he's pro players getting whatever they can, however they can. And yeah, the Anthony Davis anecdote, which is a really interesting one, he goes into great detail on that. This was one where he had gotten to know Anthony Davis when he was younger, coming up in Chicago, and got to know the family. And so Code's there on the ground floor with him. He goes to Kentucky. And then during his freshman year, around Thanksgiving, he said that Anthony Davis's dad lost his job, and he got word from somebody else at Nike that they were in a bit of a pinch, and could they help him out until he goes pro? And so Code went to a former assistant athletic director at Kentucky and says, hey, is there anything we can do here? And they're like, yeah, they put together this scheme to market a T-shirt with the famed unibrow of Anthony Davis. And it sells like wildfire, as you would expect in Kentucky, with the most rabid fan base in the country and a team that is, you know, has a chance to win a national championship. And so the immediate proceeds become $10,000 cash that is passed along to Merle, and Merle hands it to Anthony Davis's mother before Kentucky plays Indiana December 10th, 2011 in Bloomington.
Wow.
I mean, that's how the deal got done in extreme detail.
So he didn't end up cooperating with the feds. He didn't wear a wire. Why is he talking now?
He's talking now. It's interesting because I think he wants to say how the system works, but he also really wants to say that this is the unjust way that the federal crime and punishment system works and how I got ensnared in it, and that what I was doing could not possibly be construed as defrauding these schools. And so I think he's taking issue with the schools and he's taking issue with the feds, while also pulling back the curtain on this is how the underground economy works. And yes, it's against NCAA rules, or was, really still is, even with the name, image, and likeness evolution that we've had, but it shouldn't be against the law. And how did this happen, you know, and why were the everybody that was punished in this but one person, all black men, and one white guy?
I've grown up a black man my whole life, so I've seen a whole lot of shit that just wasn't right. Jim is, you know, a good guy,
right?
And he was doing his job, and he got thrown into so that we couldn't come back and say it was anything racial. He was the lone white man that had this office.
And the stated intent by the feds is that they wanted to bust big names in this. They wanted to bust Rick Pitino. They wanted to bust Bill Self at Kansas. They wanted to bust Sean Miller at Arizona. But then they didn't go get him. Whether they just got scared they couldn't pin enough on them or what, but they curtailed the investigation, went after the low-hanging fruit they knew they could get, and that's who it turned out to be. Guys like Merle Cote, who nobody had really heard of. People in basketball certainly knew him. Outside of that, nobody knew who he was, but he was a guy that helped make the underground economy work.
Eight of the nine men charged and convicted in the scandal are black men. And the high-profile white coaches, while some of them lost their jobs, they're not going to prison. So what does Cote have to say about all that?
Oh, Cote's mad, you know, about that. He understood, first of all, the absurdity of them being charged with trying to defraud the schools. And secondly, some of the actions from those schools and those coaches. Like Jim Gatto was sued by Kansas for like $1 million. Jim Gatto makes a good living, but like a low six-figure living, maybe $100,000, $125,000. You're getting sued for $1 million by a school you were trying to help. But all of a sudden, they turn around and frame you as the bad guy because the feds did it. I think that sort of mentality really made Cote angry. And seeing these coaches just completely lie about what their involvement was, according to Cote, to distance themselves from these people who had been working with them hand in hand. You know, and suddenly they're like, oh, no, we didn't have anything to do with those guys.
This system is set up so that black assistant coaches go into black neighborhoods, get black kids, and bring them to the white coaches in white schools so the white folks can make money. That's how the system works. They criminalize black men. Because if that's not the case, then you see Sean Miller or Will Wade or Rick Pitino or anybody else involved in this going to jail like me. Because they have monies, you know, and they're financially stable and able to fight this and stretch this thing out, and we don't have their financial backing, then yeah, we're the ones that take the brunt of the government's weight.
So Cote is mad. He's going to prison for something that he finds, as you mentioned, to be completely hypocritical and unjust. And he writes in his book that he could create a real problem for college coaches and athletic directors and recruits in power conferences. And he says he has a massive amount of evidence that was never presented to the jury, but that bringing that out now would serve no purpose. Do you believe him that he has all this evidence? And if he does, why is he sitting on it?
Well, yeah, and that's my one place where I have a little bit of a problem with Cote and his book, because I think you should bring forth that evidence. Let's tell the truth. You know the truth, tell the truth. And yes, I believe he absolutely has the evidence. I mean, I know that there was a great deal of frustration from him and the other defendants about the hours of wiretaps and the mountain of text messages and other documentation that was not allowed into court. That was going to be their whole argument for like, hey, I promise you, we weren't defrauding these schools. They wanted us to do this.
In many instances, these coaches are actually asking for the assistance, asking for the help. So how can I then defraud the same people that are asking for the help, in turn having $190 million or $160 million or $80 million relationship that they then renegotiate after we're convicted?
The prosecutors were blocking that, didn't want the evidence admitted. The judge upheld it for whatever reason. And so it was never heard. But my point is like, Merle, if you're in possession of those things, I'd sure like to see it. I'd sure like to hear it. And I think it would then paint the full picture of what everyone knew and what was going on. So why he's not coming out with that, I asked him on our podcast.
A lot of these black assistant coaches will be the guys who take the brunt of the heat for whatever it is I've got to say.
Right.
And I realized that.
And he didn't want to see that. But, you know, in my mind, I just wonder if he's holding that still as a potential hammer over some people's heads, some very rich people's heads who have a lot to lose in this.
Yeah, in the interim, as he's weighing what to do with the evidence that he may or may not have, how much prison time is he looking at?
9 months, although, you know, I think that could be reduced for good behavior. He's in a prison in South Carolina, and, you know, on one hand, you say, oh, 9 months. But hey, that's 9 months of your life. You're in prison, man. I don't think anybody would want to spend those 9 months, or even if it ends up being 8 or 7.5. And then you come out. And as you said, this is a guy he's the son of a former judge in South Carolina. He was a successful college player. He played professionally. he had a good professional reputation, and now he's got a felony on his record for life that he has to deal with.
There's so much going on here. Just an incredible job by you on the reporting. We'll keep an eye on it. If there's further developments, hopefully we'll have you back. Pat Forty, thank you so much for this.
My pleasure, John. Thank you.
You can read Pat Forty's piece about Merle Code on SI.com. We'll link to it in our show notes. Special thanks to Sean Sullivan at Yahoo for providing Merle Code's original audio from the College Enquirer podcast. After a break, Will Buxton on the explosion in popularity for F1, thanks to the hit Netflix show, Drive to Survive.
There are some things that are too good to keep a secret. Like how your Amex Platinum card helps you have the perfect trip. I'd like to check into the Centurion Lounge. Or how it seems like you always get those hard-to-snag tables.
Ooh, yum.
And how you get the most out of select can't-miss events. With access to the Centurion Lounge, Resi Priority Notify, and Amex card member benefits at select events, you'll have to share. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. Whether it's a walk-off grand slam or a base hit to center field. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment. It's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
Xfinity has free premium networks for everyone this month, no matter what kind of entertainment you love. Addicted to true crime? Catch killer cases and more spine-tingling shows on A&E Crime Central. Crave adventure? Explore Asian action movies on Hayah. Searching for something extreme? Check out skating, snowboarding, and more on Fuel TV Plus, the global home of action sports. And find crowd-pleasing bops on iHeartRadio's Hit Nation playlist. There's new free shows and movies to love every week. Say free this week in your Xfinity voice remote.
What are we going to talk about this year?
It's not just about what's going on the track. It's everything that happens off the track.
As recently as 3 years ago, when American motorsport fans thought about racing, they pretty much only thought about NASCAR. But all of that changed in 2019 when the show Drive to Survive dropped on Netflix. Seemingly overnight, a legion of new Formula One racing fans were created. Suddenly, friends of mine who previously had no interest in racing were hooked. With the fourth season of Drive to Survive premiering this weekend, and with F1 back on the track for a new season beginning March 20th, we wanted to talk to somebody about the explosion in popularity for both the sport and the show.
Drive to Survive's success in season one was born out of the issues that the production team experienced in making it.
This is Will Buxton. He's a reporter and digital presenter for Formula One and the de facto narrator for Drive to Survive. To hear Will tell it, that first season of the show was a happy accident that created the phenomenon.
The fact that Mercedes and Ferrari wanted nothing to do with it. This is a season where Mercedes and Ferrari are ultimately fighting for the world championship. So the two protagonists for the title weren't in the show. There's no access to their garage, their personnel, their drivers, nothing. So they had to look for stories beyond the traditional, oh, here's how a world championship's won. And from that, I think they inadvertently stumbled on what the success of the show has been, which is the human stories and the things that we can all relate to. All of the characters, the politics, the really interesting things that went on behind the scenes and not necessarily at the top teams, and making them human. I was surprised with how successful it was, but I wasn't massively surprised that it found a fan base in the US. We knew there was a fan base just waiting for Formula One. They just had to be engaged in the right way.
The show clearly needed a big personality to start season one. And as you mentioned, you know, some of the top teams weren't really on board yet. So would it be fair to say that Daniel Ricciardo was really a big beneficiary of the Netflix effect?
I'd say Netflix was a big beneficiary of Daniel Ricciardo.
Can I get you to tell me who you are and what you do for a job?
I'm Daniel Ricciardo and I'm a car mechanic. Alrighty, I got this. I'm gonna nail it. 3, 2, 1. I am Daniel Ricciardo. I was born in Perth, Australia, and I'm a Formula One driver. Sounds pretty good when I say that.
He was manna from heaven. He's such an open, friendly, naturally very, very funny guy. Great looking, his own style, just really fun. But then he pulls the helmet on and completely switches from being this carefree, jokey character to one of the best racers that Formula One has in its field. He's just superb as a person and as a racing driver.
Because of the show, how do you think it's affected Formula One as an actual racing product? Do you notice more excitement and more fan investment? Have you been recognized more?
Yeah, I've been recognized loads. The real noticeable difference was in Austin, Texas last year, mm-hmm. because there's one way in and one way out through a tunnel, and you exit out of this tunnel up the hill and there's a little pathway on either side. And, you know, normally you'd walk out or you'd drive out if you were a driver or a team boss every night and there's, you know, there's no one there. In 2021, you couldn't move. It was rammed with people wanting photographs, wanting autographs, with everyone, with engineers and mechanics, with journalists, with, wow. you know, with the drivers, with the team bosses. It's like being at a rock concert. Now that never existed before. So that's very, very noticeable. For a lot of people, it's made them perhaps slightly more wary about the conversations they have in the paddock when there's a boom mic looming.
Because don't want to be caught on a hot mic.
Yeah, exactly. Every mic's live. A couple of the things that got caught. It's a bit of a soap opera. There are obviously elements of it which are slightly stretched, but I think that just helps to draw people in and to create that real kind of passion for the characters as well. And, you know, part of that is creating heroes and villains.
I'm glad you brought up the heroes and the villains component. For listeners who haven't yet caught on, I wanted to discuss Lewis Hamilton, who's a 7-time Formula One world champ. He's a celebrity. He's a philanthropist. I believe he was knighted. He was the 4th driver to be knighted.
He is now Sir Lewis Hamilton.
Sir Lewis Hamilton. I love when people are knighted. It's fascinating to me. He's also the only black driver on the circuit. Explain to people how important he's been in growing the sport.
Lewis's influence on Formula One's global recognition, but also the way in which the sport conducts itself, it can't be overstated. He's changed everything. Part of that is through the way in which he races. He is one of the single most gifted athletes our sport has ever seen. He only needs to get that 8th world championship to be one higher than Michael Schumacher and then inarguably, from a statistical perspective, the greatest of all time. But as you say, he's become so much more than that over the last few years, pushing the causes that he believes in, whether it's to do with race relations and inequality.
When you do have that success, what are you going to do with it?
I'll be damned if I'm going to win all these championships and have all this success and not use it to make change.
It's an odd world. It's an odd sport. It's very elitist. It's very white European sport.
Sure.
And I think Lewis had always felt slightly on the periphery and never quite accepted because he doesn't fit that traditional Formula One mold. And here he was, not trying to fit that mold anymore, but actually changing the sport, changing the conversation within the sport to the things that really mattered to him. And I think it's huge.
All right, so we have Sir Lewis Hamilton, but he's not the only outsized character here, right? Tell us about Max Verstappen.
Oh boy, where do you start? Max, wow. So Max, for those that don't know, is one of the youngest Formula One world champions in history. He's in his early 20s, 24 years of age, just crowned world champion in 2021.
The championship can only be won by one, and it's going Dutch in 2021. Max Verstappen, for the first time ever, is champion of the world.
Broke Lewis Hamilton and Mercedes' run of consecutive drivers' world championships in the turbo hybrid era, which has been in place for the last five, six seasons. The only driver, other than a Mercedes driver, to win that world championship.
Oh my God, guys. I love you so much.
You have driven like a champion all year. You deserve that. We absolutely love you.
He was a karting prodigy, born to a father who was an ex-F1 driver, a mother who was a karting champion. You know, motor racing was in his blood. He was always going to gravitate towards it, or at least ask to try it out. And it turned out he was pretty good. So good that when he graduated from go-karts into open-wheel racing, this puny little sort of 15-year-old teenage kid, he just turned up and obliterated everybody. He became the youngest driver to win a race in history. And now in 2021, he's a world champion. He is an aggressive, elbows out, take no prisoners kind of racing driver. And some people love him for that. Some people hate him for that. But he has energized an entire generation of Formula One fans.
Well, specifically with Lewis and Max and that rivalry, how is that elevating the sport?
We all love a rivalry. Formula One was built on great rivalries. And I think, you know, we've got a fantastic one for the ages right now because it's two generations and it's not so much the baton being handed over as the next generation trying to wrench it out of Lewis Hamilton's grip. And that's been wonderful. You know, you have these periods of domination by a certain team. We had it in the 2000s with Ferrari where, you know, Schumacher couldn't be beaten. We've had it over the last few years with Mercedes that couldn't be beaten. And now in 2021, we had a situation where Red Bull had delivered a car, Mercedes had delivered a car, which was pretty equal. Max and Lewis going wheel to wheel. And for the first time, really, Lewis having to fight for a world championship, not against a teammate, but against somebody in different equipment. And what was wonderful, I think, in 2021 was seeing them both try to work each other out. Silverstone is a prime example where they famously came together and Max Verstappen ended up in the barriers.
Hamilton's going to try again, this time on the inside, and comes to the touch. Verstappen is out of the race, and that's a big crash into Cobbs. Lewis Hamilton and Max Verstappen coming together. Hamilton continues on for the second time this season. Hamilton and Verstappen clash and tangle on the opening lap, but this time it is ending in dramatic consequences for the championship leader.
For me, in that moment, Lewis knew precisely what he was doing. He could have taken the corner normally, but he didn't. He pretty much left his car in the middle of the track and he gave Verstappen a choice, which was, you can either back out of this or we're going to touch. And Max didn't back out. And at that point, Lewis knew here was a guy that isn't going to back out. It happened again in Italy.
Once again, it's wheel to wheel, Hamilton and Verstappen, and this time Verstappen and Hamilton have crashed out, and they are both out.
It happened in Brazil.
But he is forced wide by Verstappen, and Verstappen himself has to go off the track. Verstappen forced him so wide, he had to leave the track himself.
And watching these two guys wheel to wheel at 200 miles an hour kind of play chicken with one another and try to work each other out and be the last one to blink was just, it was exhilarating. It's so thrilling. And so as we come to 2022, they'll both be so much more aware of one another and the levels that each one is willing to push in order to win.
I wanted to talk to you about something that's omnipresent in the sport and the show and is universal for everybody. And it's always sort of lingering there in the background. And that is the danger.
Yeah. when they get into a 200 mile an hour car. There's an almost fighter pilot mentality.
Anything can happen.
I always think of my family.
All I do is pray for a safe race.
You need to respect the speed, but the second a driver has fear, you need to retire.
And you obviously have to have nerves of steel to drive Formula One. And I am quite certain they have considered their own mortality, and yet they have to put that in the back of their minds every time they climb into the car.
There's a well-worn phrase that you will never find a more singularly unimaginative human being on earth than a racing driver. Because if they spend all their time imagining the myriad of implications of what could go wrong, they would never get into a racing car. That's why sensible people don't.
Yeah.
Of course they're aware of it. You know, they've all been in big smashes. Some will have been injured, others won't have been, but they will all have had friends that have been, and many of them raced alongside, and many of them knew very well Jules Bianchi, who was the last Formula One driver to be killed in a race, and that really wasn't so long ago. Who was a lovely kid and really was seen as the shining star for Ferrari, their future world champion. Charles Leclerc, who now leads Ferrari's charge, was his godson.
Oh, wow.
Here he is now, race winner, you know, the number one guy at Ferrari. And yeah, wow. It's a lovely, but ultimately very tragic kind of full circle story.
Yeah, it really is.
We saw with Romain Grosjean in Bahrain, mm-hmm. and I'm sure everybody, whether you like Formula One or not, will have seen the footage from Bahrain and that fireball and Romain climbing out of it.
Not only has he survived going through a barrier at 160 miles an hour, within a ball of fire, that the heat must have been so extreme. It was a miracle. It was absolutely a miracle.
I want to talk to you about that,
yeah,
Will, because season 3, episode 9, is literally called Man on Fire.
Yeah.
And you bring up Romain Grosjean, and it's just this spectacular crash, Will. And you're in that episode.
There are certain moments where silence falls on a racing track, and you know what that means.
It's funny, I caught a lot of flack on social media for that line.
Why?
They thought it was overly emotional or like a planted line or something like that. It just came out of the interview that we were doing. It is a truism. There are only a few times where pretty much one time when silence does fall on a racetrack, and it's when something absolutely horrible has happened. Mm. And if you've ever been at a racetrack where something truly ghastly happens, you will know what that silence sounds like and what it feels like. And it's just gut wrenching, because at the time where you should be hearing the screaming of the cars and the engine note, there's nothing. It's just a complete void of emptiness. And Romain admitted that he did think that was it.
Yeah.
He did think that his number had been called, but then somehow found the strength to pull himself out and say, you know, no, not today. And the big scary thing with that was it was fire.
Yeah.
And you don't see fire, certainly not in Formula One, because there's no refueling anymore. And to see the fire was something you hadn't seen since the 1960s, 1970s. So it was very, very scary, but a testament. A lot of people say he was lucky. Yes, luck played a part in it in terms of, you know, the angle that he went in and the speed and everything else. But it's also the testament to the incredible amount of work that's been done on safety in the sport, that his overalls allowed him to be in those flames for as long as he was, that the halo, which had been fitted to the car, which is that sort of appendage that goes around the driver's head,
yeah,
meant that when he went through that metal barrier, he wasn't decapitated. Because, you know, 4 years ago, he would have been. That's the simplicity of it. And that just shows how far we've come, even in this short space of time. Romain got out of that crash and then went to the States, where he's had the most incredible season in IndyCar, on the podium, a huge success. The fans adore him. He's sort of taken on this, the Phoenix moniker. You know, he's really embraced the fact that he came through fire. Romain is the toast of IndyCar and doing so, so phenomenally well.
The new season is coming up.
Yeah.
You're preparing to give your passport a workout. What are you excited about? What kind of things should we expect? Which drivers should we be focused on? Give us a little preview.
Oh, man. Honestly, I'm excited about so much. It's me. I'm usually excited about pretty much everything. First of all, the new season of Drive to Survive coming out is going to be great. I think it's March the 11th that it hits Netflix. I've not seen it yet, so I have no idea what on earth I said over the last year. You have all these wonderful stories and all these incredible drivers. It's that wonderful period, and we haven't had it for a long time, where I can sit here, hand on heart, and say, I have no idea what this future holds. Because everything's new. So it's a really great place to be.
Well, so there are two races in the States this year, Austin and Miami. And you mentioned the celebrity and the pomp and the pageantry that happened in Austin. But what do you expect from the races in the States?
Miami, I think, is going to be spectacular. I've seen some of the plans that they have for the race. And genuinely, and not kind of overblowing this, I think it could change the game in terms of what people expect from a fan experience at a Grand Prix. Honestly, it's going to blow people away. It just looks sensational. So I'm really excited, really, really excited about Miami. And it just shows the further growth of the sport in the States. There's so much talk already about there being a third race in the States. You know, there's been talk for years about getting a race back to Vegas, which would just be cool.
Oh,
so,
yeah.
You know, and honestly, I think Miami is going to be, I think it's going to be sensational. And I think it's going to really take a lot of people by surprise how big an event it is.
You are clearly excited. You have now gotten me excited about it. It is an exciting time for the sport and for the show. We started at the beginning. Now we have reached the end. Will Buxton, this was a podium-worthy interview. Thank you.
Thank you.
After a break, NFL Network reporter Mike Garofalo explains the fallout after Falcons wide receiver Calvin Ridley got suspended for gambling on football.
There are some things that are too good to keep a secret. Like how your Amex Platinum card helps you have the perfect trip. I'd like to check into the Centurion Lounge. Or how it seems like you always get those hard-to-snag tables.
Ooh, yum.
And how you get the most out of select can't-miss events. With access to the Centurion Lounge, Resi Priority Notify, and Amex card member benefits at select events, you'll have to share. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. Whether it's a walk-off grand slam or a base hit to center field. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
I'm Katya Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
Xfinity has free premium networks for everyone this month, no matter what kind of entertainment you love. Addicted to true crime? Catch killer cases and more spine-tingling shows on A&E Crime Central. Crave adventure? Explore Asian action movies on Hayah. Searching for something extreme? Check out skating, snowboarding, and more on Fuel TV Plus, the global home of action sports. And find crowd-pleasing bops on iHeartRadio's Hit Nation playlist. There's new free shows and movies to love every week. Say free this week in your Xfinity voice remote.
He's a breaking news reporter for the NFL Network who has been all over one of the biggest stories in the league. Mike Garofalo, welcome to Sports Illustrated Weekly.
Thank you, buddy. Appreciate you having me. Ready to go.
Thank you for doing this. So Falcons wide receiver Calvin Ridley was suspended by the league for the entire upcoming season. At least he can apply for reinstatement after the Super Bowl in 2023. He bet $1,500 on parlays, which relative to what he lost does not sound like a lot, but the league found out and suspended him. Mike, put in perspective how big a story this is and how big a deal it is for the league.
Well, it's huge because, you know, I know people were quick to say, oh, it's the league that's partnered with all these gambling companies and it's okay to promote gambling and for them to make money off it, but it's not okay for the players, which I get to a certain degree, but I also signed the same contract with the same language and the same, I mean, we're not allowed as reporters who are employed by the NFL Network and thereby employed by the NFL to gamble on more than just the NFL. So it's A, what you signed up for. And I understand the integrity of the game. I mean, I understand why it goes to a time before many of us were even watching the league or even alive, and something that they wanted to maintain the whole way and something that they made clear when they made these partnerships, said they're going to have the resources of those partners at their disposal to make sure that the integrity of the game is upheld and that nobody is, whether it's player or coach or executive or reporter, is gambling on league stuff. So yeah, it's huge for the league. It's huge for everything that they've stood for a number of years. I do understand where people are coming from defending Calvin Ridley and saying, hey, what's the big deal? But I also understand where the league is coming from saying that they've got to uphold what is very important to them, and that's the integrity of the game.
Yeah, there's a fine line here for sure, because as you mentioned, not just the NFL, leagues, all kinds of sports leagues are partnering with gambling concerns now. But on the other hand, having players, coaches, executives gambling on sports, or in your case, reporters, that's something that's a little bit different. You reported that Calvin Ridley bet on his team. And for people of our age or older, immediately my first thought was Pete Rose, who was banned mm-hmm. from baseball for life for betting on the Reds. And I know it's a different time and a different era now, but it seems like a really fine line for the NFL, right? Because on the one hand, you have, hey, we want fans, or at least you're free to gamble if you're a fan on these games. But for us personally, anybody who's even tangentially or officially associated with the NFL, we got to make sure that that's separate.
Yeah, I mean, it goes beyond that, right? Like if I'm on business with the NFL, if I'm sent somewhere on business pertaining to the NFL Network, I can't even set foot in a casino to play roulette.
Is that right?
Yeah, no, that's part of the deal. Because if you're on business, this is the logic. If you're on business and you lose, let's say I lose a ton of money, and now I got to get myself out of this hole, what's the quickest and easiest way for you to do that? Hey, I've got some information on this event that I'm covering, whether it's a game or one of their, what they call tentpole events. This is the way I can pay my debt back. Whether you give me money straight for this or you forgive my gambling debt, whoever it is, you know, specifically if you borrowed money off of somebody or the casino itself, whatever. That's their logic. And for a guy to be betting on his own team, certainly betting against them, I think would be worse.
But sure.
To bet on his own team, it's the use of that information, which they did say in this case, there was no indication there was any inside information, which I will say this, backing up a second. He was kind of on his own. He was going through his own stuff. There were legit mental issues at play. I do know that a lot of his teammates at some point in time were like, we have no idea what's going on with this guy. So the notion that he could have been out of communication with his teammates for at least a couple of days is not that far-fetched.
Sure.
But certainly he had a beat for what was going on there. But their thing was no inside information and no influence. No like, hey, and again, influence is more, I would think, betting against the team. Like, hey, do me a favor and drop a couple passes because I bet on the other team here.
Right.
And listen, the fact that his defense was I only bet $1,500, which he could have bet $1 and it would have been enough. But I do understand what his defense was about, which was, hey, I bet $1,500. It's not like it was life or death for me. And I like, hey, you absolutely got to take a dive here. So I get where he was coming from. And again, he bet on them, not against them. But it's just something that they clearly want to stay away from, particularly now because they have those partnerships.
Yeah, so about that, how the NFL found out here is key. And you did some really excellent reporting on this. Explain to listeners how it is that the NFL discovered that Ridley bet on football, because as you said, they're monitoring to make sure execs, coaches, and players and broadcasters aren't gambling.
Yeah, I mean, it's the Hard Rock is the app, because he was in Florida and the Hard Rock, I think, noticed some activity. And I guess that's basically just traced back to his name was Calvin Ridley. I mean, sounds like he had it under his name on his phone. At that point, they notified the NFL's partner in this one, which is Genius Sports Group. Now, Genius Sports Group is not a gambling site. It is a service that the NFL has used to be its official data distributor when it comes to media companies and sports gambling sites. So the Hard Rock notified Genius Sports Group, which was able to corroborate the information and let the NFL know. At that point, they began an investigation. Sounds like Ridley just flat out copped to making the bets, which he did again on Twitter after the story broke. And then levied the suspension, which again, I mean, I saw some folks, including Joe Banner, say that he's surprised it was only a year, that it could have and should have been worse. Again, that's a lot of the traditionalists, because I know a lot of the modern thinking folks. I mean, when I tweeted out that he placed bets on his phone, I got a bunch of people saying, hey, he's just like us. You know, I get yeah. that. I do. But I also know that there are certain things that you agree to when you sign a contract, and there are conflicts of interest in many areas of life. Lawyers will talk to you about conflicts of interest, and agents in the business and team types, sometimes conflicts of interest. You know, there are conflicts of interest that you agree to. You might sit there and say, well, it's silly that Joe Blow can make a bet, but Calvin Ridley can't. But that's kind of what you sign up for, and that's what you agree to. And the NFL wanted to make sure that it was clear to everybody. And I do remember this because I was on the day that the NFL announced, I think it was Caesars or one of their partners that they really announced, and it was a topic on Total Access. And I remember talking about it on the air. I said, they're making these partnerships, but they made it clear they're also going to work with these companies to ensure that the integrity of the game is of the utmost importance, and they will have cooperation and information at their disposal. And that's how it happened. And that's how Calvin Ridley was pinched on this one.
Yeah. And so the integrity of the game thing, I get, Mike. But on the other hand, if I'm Calvin Ridley, and you mentioned his Twitter reaction, he said, you know, I don't have a gambling problem. I bet a total of $1,500. And as a result of that bet of $1,500, he lost what? North of $10 million, almost $11 million, right?
Yeah.
And so that's a big thing to exchange. And as you mentioned, the NFL statement says in their investigation, quote, uncovered no evidence indicating any inside information was used or that any game was compromised in any way. So if that is the case, that he wasn't, you know, some inside sharp gambling a ton of money with all this, you know, insider knowledge, if it wasn't that, if it was just a couple of one-off bets here, is it just that the league is making an example of him? Is that what this is?
No, I mean, in certain ways, yeah. I do know that they don't want to go an inch in that direction, because what happens when somebody tries to take a yard? I will say this. I mean, if it was inside information, betting against his team or some kind of influence, it's probably a lifetime ban.
Sure.
So for folks to say, hey, it probably should have been worse, it could have been worse had the circumstances been worse. So now, to explain folks how it works, it's contract tolls, basically. So the $11 million he was supposed to make this upcoming season gets pushed back one more year. And so when he comes back, his contract resumes where it left off. Now, in the end, that's a year off his career that he's not going to get back. So in a sense, yeah, he sort of lost $1 million. I mean, you could slice it. He lost money. There's no question. He lost a significant amount of money. There's no doubt about that. And this is a guy who, and this cannot be ignored, came into this offseason with questions. Came into this offseason as a guy that we were looking at that was going to potentially relocate because he's going through mental health issues, which are legit. I mean, that was a part of this thing.
Sure.
But I've heard so many things. And one of the things that I was told when I was reporting on Calvin Ridley back in January, and I said, this guy could be up for a fresh start somewhere, is somebody said to me, look, this guy's got vices. And I didn't mention that on the air because I thought that that was kind of, you needed a little more there. And you needed to definitely have that all the way. But now that we've put one on display, and I know he said he doesn't have a gambling problem, but this is a guy who, hey, I was away from football and felt like in some form or fashion he needed to be back in it, and that's why he placed the bets. I mean, I don't know, have the full psychological breakdown, but I'm sure that was part of it. It's a guy who had questions and had red flags and had situations that even the Falcons acknowledged publicly coming into this offseason. You add this on top of that. I had somebody say today, you know, he's never going to play again. I don't believe that at all. I really don't. He's got too much talent. He's going to have some time away to maybe deal with whatever issues he's got going on beyond this gambling thing. I think he can come back. I think he can come back strong. I think he could be a good player. He has been in this league for quite some time. So I'm not going to say he's never going to play again, but certainly his future has been affected here.
I mean, it's such a bombshell story, Mike. Like, even for a league like the NFL, where there's always a bombshell story, one after the next. Mm-hmm. You're as plugged in as anybody. Like, what's the feeling behind the scenes across the league? I mean, I'm sure that you were talking to a lot of people today. Like, what's the overarching takeaway here from people behind the scenes?
Yeah, it's, I do know that I've spoken to agents who said they made sure they rounded up all their clients and said, don't be stupid, basically. Like, yeah. You know, it's not worth it. Even Calvin was laying 1,500, like you said, the first guy in history to lay 1,500 and lose 11 million.
Unbelievable.
So I know there's a lot of that going on. I'm sure there's going to be a lot of that with teams toward the players. Right now, they're really not supposed to be in communication. So maybe this is more of a training camp or spring, excuse me, OTAs when they get back to work. Hey guys, FYI, and it doesn't even have to be just NFL. I mean, you could be gambling on anything. Now, listen, they can go to the Kentucky Derby in the offseason. They can go to the casino in the offseason. They're allowed to do all that stuff. But if they catch you gambling on sports or football in particular, let's say some guys want to lay some bets on the NFL draft coming up, that's not going to fly. So there'll be some reminders as we go on here from the NFL, from teams toward the players and from agents certainly toward their own clients.
Man, what a wild story. You did excellent work on it. You can find him breaking news all the time, really. He's doing some right now, probably, on the NFL Network. Mike Garofalo, thank you for this.
Thank you, brother. Appreciate it.
Sports Illustrated Weekly is a production of Sports Illustrated and iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite shows. And for more of Sports Illustrated's best stories and podcasts, visit SI.com. This episode of Sports Illustrated Weekly was produced by Cooper McKim, Jessica Yarmosky, and Isaac Lee, who is also our sound engineer. Our senior producer is Dan Bloom. Our executive producers are Scott Brody and me, John Gonzalez. Our theme song is by Nolan Schneider. Thanks for listening, and if you've stuck around this long, we leave you with this.
I remember Sean walking around the offices in London being hugely excited. And he was just like, Will, my man, you got to be in it. And I was just like, okay, cool.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. Whether it's a walk-off grand slam or a base hit to center field. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
I'm Katya Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
Xfinity has free premium networks for everyone this month, no matter what kind of entertainment you love. Addicted to true crime? Catch killer cases and more spine-tingling shows on A&E Crime Central. Crave adventure? Explore Asian action movies on Hayah. Searching for something extreme? Check out skating, snowboarding, and more on Fuel TV Plus, the global home of action sports. And find crowd-pleasing bops on iHeartRadio's Hit Nation playlist. There's new free shows and movies to love every week. Say free this week in your Xfinity voice remote.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.